You're listening to the Ape for Comics podcast, sponsored by StashMyComics.com and our local comic book shop in Roanoke, Virginia, BNDComics.com. And now, here's your hosts, Matt Barrett and Neil Rickman.
Hello, people. You're listening to Ape for Comics, episode number 11. This show goes to 11.
It's one louder.
It's one louder than the last episode we did. I'm your host, Matt Barrett. With me is always my faithful...
I can do it. Neil Rickman. I always sound like I'm on NPR for like the first 10 minutes.
And we're here to do what we do every week, and we are pretty much going weekly now, as much as we can. Talking about comic books, we do the comic swap every week. What is the comic swap? I don't know.
It's where Matt and I exchange comics we want each other to read.
Yeah.
And then we tell you guys about them.
Yeah, we come back on the show and talk about them and try to see what the other one thinks and so on and so forth. And then we do a special feature. And this week, we're going to talk a little bit about some 80s comics. Derek from the StashMyComics.com board was nice enough to comment and ask us if we would touch on some 80s comics. He had some specific comics in mind. I didn't have any in my collection, so we were just going to kind of talk about it as a general topic.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you, Derek.
It's awesome.
Before we start, though, let's talk just a tiny bit about our ongoing conversation, the Avengers. Drop or no drop?
I don't know. I talked to you earlier and I said drop. I don't know now. I don't know if I could bring myself to kind of... I keep expecting it to be more.
I feel like I'm dropping a lot too soon, so this might be one that I try to stick it out a little bit longer.
Yeah, I don't... I just... With the movie, I guess the movie's kind of making me hold on. And then some of the actual, like, single titles are really good right now, so I'm expecting this to kind of... Like, the Hulk's title with Mark Waid's really good. And Jonathan Hickman has the potential to make this good. I know he does from his Fantastic Four run. I mean, it was amazing. Fantastic.
For those of you that didn't read the first arc, I won't give it away, but let's just say it was building up pretty nicely, and right at about the issue, we thought that it was going to give us some really cool action and some moments between the bad guys and the good guys. Kind of fell flat on his face. So I don't know where it's going from here, but... Maybe I'll hang on a little bit longer. I mentioned in a previous show I was going to hang on to Thunderbolts till 6, but I didn't. I'm dropping after 4.
I'm trying to give Avengers a straight chance because I love the movie so much, and I have liked Avengers in the past, not just the movie, but the comics. This is, I don't know. I'm not sure it's what I want.
And we need to give Hickman the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this is a little aside to a bigger part of the story that's coming. Maybe the baddies aren't really going away. Maybe they're coming back stronger in full force. This was just a little side trail to throw us off.
I still think he's juggling way too many characters. He excelled at doing not... I don't know. I don't want to say... He was pretty good with multiple characters in Fantastic Four because he wasn't just dealing with them. He was dealing with them and then like all the Future Foundation.
Right.
I think it's taken a minute to really get a grip on what he wants to do and drive it forward. However, that being said, if this book starts centering around a lot of the unknowns I don't really want to deal with much in the title, then I probably will let it go just because I kind of want to see Joss Whedon's cast of Avengers at this point. And I'm not a big fan of Assemble, so I don't know where to go, really. Yeah. So.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's just our opinion.
Maybe
you're digging it, and if you are, that's cool. It's certainly
it's just not my bad flavor.
Art. Yeah,
right?
And it's certainly not a terrible story. There's a lot of good things going on. I think it just fell flat for me by that fifth issue. I was a little disappointed, but he has a chance to bring me back in.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe a couple more issues, maybe.
Yeah, I'll hang in there. If not, I might just start going more to the single each single Avenger that I like's book.
Right.
Like, if I dropped that, I would probably definitely pick up Thor by Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
So, I might do that anyway. I've got a habit.
Yeah, Jason Aaron's writing some really good stuff. Wolverine the X-Men is still phenomenal.
That's a fun book.
It is.
It's fun. It's one of those X-Men books that, yes, it deals with a little bit of tragedy here and there, but it still seems really fun, even when there's tragedy. I don't know what there is about it, but...
There's a lot going on, and it does a good job of moving newer, younger characters that are a part of the school, but also moving the older character, the teachers. And it's got a really cool... You know, if you like your X-Men centering around, like, Charles Xavier's big mansion, the school...
Right.
This is definitely your book. It's a lot's happening there.
Oh, yeah. I like all of the new, younger mutants, and I like... seeing how some of the older, well-known, you know, staple mutant characters deal with it. So now that they're teachers, so yes.
A highly recommended read. Okay, we'll move on then to Comic Swap.
Comic Swap.
And first, we will talk about. Let's talk about Conan.
I'm talking about Conan.
Because we mentioned that on the last show. Neil talked it up so much, I decided I wanted to read it, and darn it, I really, really like it, to the point where I'm going to find a book to drop to add this. I haven't figured out which one yet, but...
I'm sorry.
I'm aboard the Conan train.
I'm pulling these out now, so that we can kind of look through them as we go through things.
Yes,
here's so, the sorry for the crinkle of the bag, folks.
No, it's like, it makes it more...
authentic.
Realistic, it's like...
So... I don't know. I've got like a stack, a fistful of Conan here.
Now we've got, I've noticed, we're up to 12 issues now. I'm thinking there was two artists, correct? Two different artists through this 12.
There was.
Series of books. Okay, I preferred the first artist, to be honest.
The Becky Clooney?
Yes.
Okay. That's odd, because I think I was more with the second. James, okay. Was it James Herron and Dave Stewart? Dave Stewart does the colors in all of them, I believe, and I like his colors no matter what.
And of course, we have Brian Wood doing the brilliant writing here. If you don't know anything about Conan or just have a vague notion of him, kind of like I did, this is the perfect book for you to get a hold of. It does everything right in terms, I think, of pacing. The art's great, and the story moves along at such a... It's hard to describe. It's a perfect read for me because it's not too many words... But it's enough action, and there's enough movement where each issue feels like, okay, I gotta read the next one. But you're having so much fun, you get lost in it.
And the narration.
Yes. I love the narration.
The narration, I mean, you might have mentioned this, but I have to go back to it if you did. The narration, I think, looking back at it, was part of the... I really thought the narration was just so solid. I mean,
yeah.
The dialogue and the characters he captured, the high adventure, and definitely... The barbaricness of Conan, but just the way he narrated, he made it feel like an epic tale.
Yeah,
I thought so. You could tell it was the old grizzled man who starts off with Conan. Let me tell you of the tales of high adventure. You know, like it captures that very well.
It does. And Conan, he's a bad dude. He's if you're reading this book, you'll start to notice pretty quickly that any battle he goes into, you're pretty confident he's going to win. That's what he does. He takes people out. He doesn't lose. He has no fear. And that's his strength, is having no fear. But what's a nice contrast with this is the female that he meets, the pirate Belit. Is that how you say it?
Belit or Belit, I guess. Yeah, I don't... Yeah.
The female pirate who is very well known among many parts of these lands for pillaging and stealing and being a general nuisance to people. He hooks up with her, and suddenly they're sort of equals. But this could be his downfall, and that's what I like about this book. As strong as he is and as fearless as he is, this woman could very well be the death of Conan.
You know, and isn't that the case with us all?
Yes.
You know?
It can be.
And not that I don't love my beautiful fiancé, and but sometimes, you know, us men, we just don't know what to do with women. We're just like, what?
Yeah.
Clueless, and then I catch a roundhouse or something. It's all good. Speaking of which, Valentine's Day coming up. Anyway.
One thing I did learn is that Conan's first crew of sailor, of shipmates, you don't want to be those guys.
Oh, no. I don't talk too much about that, but yeah.
Bad news for them.
Being Conan's buddy, it can be good.
He can be
but
good
let's
friend.
Just say... if there's something horrendous coming and he's your friend, it doesn't mean you're going to live.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too much of a spoiler.
Yeah.
But that necessarily mean that you're going to make it if he's your buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, just because Conan's hard doesn't mean you are. Like, bro.
They're dealing with a lot of different landscapes here, too, which I like. Like, sometimes you're on the sea, and then they can go into a port, and that's the great power in this book, is the fact that he is on a boat. He can go to any sort of different land. There's a two or three issues that take place in his homeland, and he brings Belit, however you say that, into his world, and she's the fish out of the water. I liked that suddenly he had a little bit less respect for her, that she couldn't, you know, sort of make it in his world. The harshness of his world was too much for her. She's used to the desert and sun and pampering.
Yeah, Hyboria's not a place for her, no.
No.
Hyboria's not a place for many.
It's a very cold and isolated place with lots of dangers, and the people basically work themselves to the bone just to survive. Where Conan's from.
It's one of those titles that makes you want to suffer so you can be that awesome. It's like I want to go work my fingers to the bone now so I can be Conan.
I
want to
be Conan.
Yeah. So I think that instead of maybe some seminars at places people work, they should probably just hand out Conan books. And people will work that much harder because they want to be Conan.
Not a bad idea. Now, Conan, this is a violent book, but I didn't find too much wrong with the language so much. It's the violence.
There was some nudity. It was a brief little, but yeah.
Yeah, nothing too bad, but definitely an adult book. There's heads and limbs being lopped off and some pretty intense action sequences.
Yeah, some splendor there. David Stewart did fantastic with those colors, that's what I'll say.
Oh, yeah. So,
he does some good work in, like, BPRD and some of the other Dark Horse Stable titles that I'm blown away by his color work, so.
Yeah.
I'm starting to notice colors more and more, and I should have noticed them before, but.
They can really make or break a book, and.
Unsung heroes, those colors.
So. Yeah. And if you'll notice, a lot of them, they like to stick with a palette, and. Like, I'm looking at this cover here, and you can tell it's pretty much grays, blues, and browns, and then the red is the contrast. And your good colorist will choose sort of a muted color palette for most things, and then when it needs things to pop, like blood or a cape or an arrow or a weapon, that's when they bring out the bright colors, and that's what sticks in your mind. Great job here with that.
Yeah, I love this title. I'm really glad that I picked it up.
Yeah, it took me just a couple sittings to finish it because it flowed so nicely. So very recommended read. Story wise, I mean this is a perfect 10 for me. I can't say enough about how the story moved. There was no parts in it that I was bored. The rhythm was perfect. You know, art wise, it floats between 7s and 8s for me, depending. Not like my favorite art of all time, but definitely not something to sneeze at. So,
right. I'm going to give the whole thing, art and story, a 9.
Okay.
Kind of levels out that. And I loved both artists, I will say that. I went more towards, I guess I would say it was almost an anime-ish Ian Flux look on on the other guy.
Right.
And you went more with Becky Clooney, who, is that Clooney? No, Cloonan.
Clunan, yes.
Clunan doing Conan. That's funny. So anyway, but it's a little more cartoony on that one, but it's not cartoony, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more animated.
Mm-hmm.
And I love both, but I tend to side with the weird looking one. I don't know why.
Okay.
I think it's because it reminded me of some of maybe the old anime I used to watch or something. So.
Fair enough. So that's our thoughts on Conan 1 through 12.
It's all about them.
When does 13 come out?
13, I don't know. I should know this.
Soon,
hopefully. I got these like in such a run myself, catching up on them.
Right.
That I kind of lost track of how it came. I kind of picked up a fistful of Conan all at once because I had Terry at B&D, thank you, Terry, picking these up for me, and I waited till they were about done and then swooped them up. So,
okay.
Very good stuff.
Very good. Let's move on to Uncanny X-Force number 1.
Yes.
We have mentioned our love for Uncanny X-Force, and we had also mentioned that perhaps this was a book we would not pick up, but as I dropped stuff, I thought, I kind of want to pick this up, so I did.
Uncanny X-Force, pleasantly surprised here, I will say. It's got a cover price of $3.99. Sam Humphries doing the story, Ron Garney doing the art. I believe I have that correct.
And I'm not familiar with Sam Humphries.
I'm not either. I'm not familiar with either. I was happy on both sides of the fence. Sam Humphries, his dialogue feels very 80s. The whole plot to this felt very 80s. And for any fans of Uncanny X-Force coming off Remender's run who were curious about how Psylocke's going to deal with her issues and how Phantom X deal with hers, definitely a title to pick up. They seem to very much put down the foot that they're going to be dealing with those issues in this book. And then you've got awesome Mohawk Storm for the win in the title, leading it up. And Storm and Psylocke kind of play Riggs and Murtaugh in this from Lethal Weapon. It feels so 80s.
They're
jaded. Not to spoil anything, but the beginning of this book starts off with Wolverine kicking Psylocke out of the school.
Yeah.
Because she's violent.
Yeah, she's...
Like, what?
He's trying to straighten up and become...
She's a bad influence.
Yeah.
He's trying to get off.
He's messing with... She's messing with his style. His new style of responsible Wolverine.
I mean...
Which is hilarious.
This whole... About the whole plot of this first book reminded me of an 80s movie such as Lethal Weapon. You've got, you know, the old-timer X-Men trying to keep hold of... Kind of, you know, definitely an old-timer X-Men, but not as old-timer as Storm.
Right.
And, she's trying to keep Psylocke, who just got off this, you know, killer elite team, to not go and kill, you know, anybody they're after, perhaps. And, you know, Psylocke goes running off like Mel Gibson, going wild. And, you know, she's just like, oh, daggone it, Psylocke, I'm getting too old for this. Which Storm is not in any way. You know, she follows her fine, but it just feels like she's trying to rein it in and Psylocke and play it cool like a thief. I will say in this book, it looks like they're going to explore the fact that, yes, Storm is not just a weather goddess, but a practiced thief as well,
right.
Which I'm interested in seeing how that plays off of Phantom X.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving the dynamic in this, and the more I talk to everyone out there on the airwaves here, of the podcast waves, the more I'm selling myself on this book.
Right.
Because the very end of it, Bishop shows up, you know, spoiling a little bit there, but... You see him on the cover, you might wonder where he's at. He does show up at the end, I'm not going to say how or what. But, and you get a good taste of Puck from Alpha Flight for all you Canadians that were wanting your Canadian X-Men back, perhaps. This is a small piece coming your way.
Yes.
So
Puck is cool. Puck is
a ladies man. I don't mean that as a small joke.
No. Puck is a ladies man, and he's very small.
He is.
So if you're not familiar with Puck, he's this cool little, I guess he was a dwarf, correct?
Right.
And what did you say his powers are?
I'm going to be honest. I'm not completely sure. He just bounces off things from what I understand. I haven't read up on his power set. I've never been too knowledgeable about Alpha Flight or any of the characters' powers.
Yeah.
I will admit to that. I should be.
I had the first few issues of Alpha Flight from one of their runs, and I don't remember.
Seeing as how he's bouncing off things, I'm going to probably think that his powers have something to do with kinetic energy and directing it somehow.
Okay.
And or absorbing it one way or the other.
Yeah, this is a great big book of mystery. You've got, you know, Psylocke, who, if you read the last Uncanny X-Force, is coming at off kind of a rough time and in a sort of strained, good and bittersweet, I would say, relationship with Phantom X. Phantom X is back, but there's three of him. And on this cover, we get the female one. We're not sure what's going on there. And then you've got Bishop. Who makes a small appearance.
That's a little WWE shot out there.
And so a lot of weird characters here. And let's not forget Spiral, who Psylocke has a big beef with. And this is kind of cool. I'm interested in seeing how the heck they get this group together as a team to do anything. And that's the intrigue for me. And it was done pretty well, like I said to you earlier when we were talking about this. The beginning of it, that was sort of the 80s movies, had a really good pace to it, and then they kind of just had to throw in Bishop and Phantom X, and that broke it up a little bit for me, but not enough to make me jump off. I mean, I'm on board for this crazy ride.
So tell me, are you on for this firmly?
For a while, yeah.
All right, well, I'm not going to pick it up because I'm going to read yours, Dad.
Okay.
I'm going to try and limit my habit, and hopefully if you start hating it, then we'll see. If you're probably not liking it, I won't either. So.
Yeah.
But
that's cool. I read yours.
It'll help us, yeah. I think, if I stop selling myself and have you sell me titles.
Right.
So I'll just, you know, keep it there.
So story-wise, I would give this, you know, like a 8.
Yeah, I feel that.
And art-wise, probably right about the same.
Yeah. All right, solid 8 for me and Matt, yeah.
Pretty good read. A lot better than I expected. When I first saw
Do you think we're giving it 8 because it did surprise us? Like, we were probably going into it, like, there's no way it's going to compare.
I think that's part of it, but a part of me knew I would like this just because I was really digging Psylocke at the end of Uncanny X-Force, and I love Phantom X, and even if it has to be the female version of him, I'll read it. So,
well, it did have the male as well.
Yeah, he was in it, and I think he's going to play a big role because they are continuing. Well, it seems they're going to continue the relationship between him and Psylocke in one way or another. And they also touch on Storm's recent run-in with Wolverine, relationship-wise. In fact, he's the one that cut her hair, in case you didn't know.
That's cool.
She's like, hey, shave my head, do it before I change my mind, which was kind of weird. That was in Wolverine the X-Men 24, by the way.
I hope she stays with the Mohawk as long as she can. I hope she brings the attitude from the 80s.
Yeah.
Where she was like, I'll beat Cyclops up without my powers.
She's angry that Black Panther dumped her.
Yeah.
she's angry she doesn't have a country in Africa.
Yeah, I've never been a big T'Challa fan either, you know? I get that he's a king and everything, and yeah, that's me sliding a book back in there. So.
Special effects.
There you go.
This is me opening an Arizona green tea, if I can get it open.
Tasty. Close the blast doors. So,
Arizona, if you want to pay me to promote your product,
we'll move to Arizona.
info@8forcomics.com.
We'll even move to Arizona.
I love Arizona. It's a great place.
If Matt won't, I will kidnap Matt, and we'll move to Arizona.
Oh my gosh, you hear that? That's Neil's cat scratching a box.
Guest appearance by Legacy. That was him.
This is kind of fun, having the mic like this. People can hear what's going on in our real lives.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's crazy. All right, well, let's move on to the special feature.
StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it. 80s comics.
Sure. Prestige world. Why?
Do you have a lot of 80s comics?
I do. A lot of them are buried, so I kind of cheated, but we'll talk about that.
Okay. I don't have a ton from my childhood, but the first thing I dug up was this Booster Gold number 11 from 1986, and I figured this was a fair assessment of the
era. Oh, that's fair.
At least
for DC Comics. White suit he's in?
Yes.
My God, is that a fair assessment?
You'll have to look this up. Booster Gold, number 11 from 86, and the cover is an advertisement that says, now you can drive Booster Gold power. And there's a little more to that as you get into the
issue. I love the, what car is that? Is that like a Thunderbird? What is that?
He hooks up with this sleazy ad guy, and unbeknownst
as always,
to Booster,
this happens a lot with him.
The guy sort of undercuts him and not only takes his image, but also starts trying to build replicas of his car to sell to people. So
I didn't even know he had a set car.
A Booster
ever.
Car, yeah.
Wow.
And what I love about this first page, I just have to mention,
I'm
by
smelling
the
80s from that book, by the way.
This is written and penciled by Dan Jurgens, who I've definitely heard of.
Wow.
And Mike DiCarlo as an inker. What I love about this first page, though, talk about redundant. It talks about these 7 guards that were killed when violence erupted at California's Mogales Maximum Security Prison. And then right down in the next paragraph, it says, details are still sketchy, but eyewitnesses say that the bloodbath was the result of an incredible prison break.
No, you know, I just think a few guys fell and it turned bad.
I thought it was pretty obvious to describe the first
people
time.
People trip that's a lot in prison.
I won't go into all the details about this book, because I think we kind of wanted to do a generalization of the 80s.
Look at the dialogue in that book, by
it's
the way.
It's a lot of dialogue. This took me like 20 minutes to read.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I'd forgotten about 80s comics is, much like Silver Age, they're a deep read, often. And Booster Gold says things like, wowza, and there's this Tom Selleck looking guy rescuing cats. I don't know what's going on here, but this was a lot of
fun. There should always be a Tom Selleck guy rescuing cats. I'm just going to put that out there.
I love these 80s books.
I would watch Tom Selleck in like cat rescue movies. Tom Selleck is Meow Mixer. Oh, that sounds bad. That's, well, it would be bad, but that just sounds horrible.
Well, we were talking about this earlier, and how now that I've read a few 80s comics, and because it's been a while, how they were very much geared towards kids, you know, that, and we were kids as we were reading them, and how that's shifted, you know, that kind of shifted in the 90s, and now you can scarcely find a book that I would consider safe like this Booster Gold book, you know.
It's tough. Well, working the shop, it's tough, but maybe not as tough as I would think. You know, noticing things now, picking up different books, like Wolverine and the X-Men is a great tween book, in my opinion.
Yeah, it can.
I'm noticing more and more tween books. I had problems with the tweens coming in, because we had an all-ages section, and then we had, like, the other stuff. And the thing was, is there were some titles out there on the rack that were very much, you know, that should have been in tween hands, but it's still up to the parents a lot on that, and it's tough because some of the parents come and they just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and to place them while the kids are all wanting the darkest of the dark because, you know, Johnny up the street whose parents don't give a lick, you know, and then you've got parents in there that do, it's tough.
Well, it's hard because as great as a lot of the all-ages books are, there's not a lot of, in the superhero genre, and that's what a lot of kids gravitate towards. And when we were kids, you could pick up any book on a spinner rack, and it was pretty safe to read. And that's changed. I mean, and obviously I guess that had to happen, but I don't think it would be nice for them to have some books that I would consider to be done by some of their best writers and some of their best artists that can still be all ages.
Yeah.
But it seems like they feel, you know, it's just like with movies. They feel it necessary to make it PG-13 to expand their audience. Because they think older people couldn't possibly care about a book that didn't have at least two cuss words and some blood in it.
I will say it's also, I think it is kind of tough to find that medium too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's tough to find something that doesn't dumb it down.
Right.
To either, you know, highly educated, like, smart, you know. I met a lot of advanced kids in the store that were, like, reading beyond, well beyond my level. Not that I'm advanced at all, but,
right.
But you know, the kids are getting smarter, quicker. That's just the way things are, I think. And they're not going to read something that's just like, well, Green Lantern went to the mall, and Green Lantern went and got some yogurt, and he happened to stop a villain at the yogurt stand. They don't want that. They want what we've got, but we can't. A lot of what we're reading it has been darker.
Right.
I think it might be that, you know, we're a little bit more cynical, and it appeals to more of the adults that grew up with comics. And it makes it tougher. However, that being said, I look at what Cartoon Network has that they're killing, by the way, with the Green Lantern series and Young Justice. Those touch that border so well.
Yeah.
They really do. They deal with some pretty hardcore stuff while not going over that line. And for me, I would say, you know, definitely, if Cartoon Network's going to stop those, kind of do what they did with Smallville and what they're doing with Arrow. Give them a comic representation.
Right.
Continue the seasons in comic format for tweens and, you know, and adults in all ages.
Right.
And, I mean, it's... there it is.
I agree with that. So, I mentioned something that I read. What did you read from the 80s?
Okay, I kind of cheated. I have a compilation, and it's not... it goes into the 80s, but it's Judge Dredd, the complete Brian Bolan works. And I had been reading on this when we got the requests you know, to start to maybe read a few 80s titles.
Right, so you're already there.
And, yeah, I was digging some Judge Dredd. I was trying to go back in. The movies kind of inspired me to go back and check out some of the actual classic, you know, British Judge Dredd. And the stories I have found in here, first off, let me just say, Judge Dredd in the good old UK is very much just very short stories. All, you know, they were just short stories all comprised. It was kind of like a compilation you would get, the 2000 AD.
Right.
We had talked about this, I think, when we reviewed the first Judge Dredd by IDW. And these short stories, they go a long way. They go a long way towards just telling pretty deep stories, I would say. So pretty out there. Like, one of the stories was these guys robbed... They robbed this big jewelry store. They did something with the oxygen, which is now piped into the planet to make everybody pass out. But the irony of the story was that these guys had went and through all this trouble and messed with the air supply that's now fed into the planet to make everyone pass out and they could rob things. Well, they get back to their apartment with all this loot. And Dredd's looking for them. They can't find them. They've done this great job of hiding who they are. And it comes down to it that they forgot to pay their air bill. There's an air bill now.
Ah.
And so they're in there with all this loot, and they're like, they're trying to find the key so they can get out because their air is about to be shut out of their apartment. And they lost the key and all the loot. So eventually Dredd and the other judges find them, but it's like after they've been suffocated. And it's, they state in the book that, you can mess with, you know, your electric bill and your gas bill, but you don't mess with the air bill. it's like of course not.
Yeah.
So apparently it's a hot commodity. It's a, we're like Spaceballs, they're selling air.
Now, who was the publisher at this time?
It's a British publisher. IDW has gotten the rights to do this. And
this is all black and white, huh?
Yeah, it was all, the compilation is all black and white. I don't know if the originals themselves were all black and white.
I didn't read any independents when I was a kid.
Me either. I mean,
that was available, at least for a while there, was Marvel, DC, and
right.
And then the comic book stores came, and then that sort of changed things. But tell you, I miss the spinner racks. I miss the drugstore spinner racks.
I tell you, I'm not sure. Right now, it's escaping me as to who. Where the original publisher was in the UK, but they it took a lot, I remember, for IDW to get this to happen. It's not easy to get the Judge Dredd's books over or even compiled. There's like a rights limbo it kind of falls into, I think, in some areas. However, I mean, they were just great stories, and they're not PC, by the way, because there's people, you can definitely tell they make them look like Charles Bronson.
Right.
That type of old 80s, I've got a gun and I will shoot you, person.
The art in this is just incredible.
Yeah, Brian Bolland is amazing. And, I mean, this is like late 70s, like 78, 79, into 80.
Mm.
And, I mean, some of the stories are just, they get very deep. Like, there's one about an alien that Judge Dredd runs across that's being abused by these slavers. And it's not really his jurisdiction to do anything about it because of where he's at, but he ends up finding a way to do something about it, and it tells this story about how Tweak, this alien, and his family basically were playing dumb so that the humans wouldn't find out that they're actually very intelligent and go and, like, basically ruin their planet as we have ours at this time.
Huh.
In the book. Like, you know, the world has pretty much been just... used up and abused all the heck in Judge Dredd. You know, there's two mega cities and the rest is like this wasteland. There's a mega city on the west coast and there's a mega city. Mega City 1 is on the east and Mega City 2 is on the west coast.
Huh.
And all in between that's like a mutated wasteland that they have to cross. But it goes very deep, and you feel really bad for this alien. You really start like hating your own race at that point. It's like, These stories, they're very, I think they're timeless in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely tell the age on them in some of this, but they all are a very deep read, as you said with yours. That, like, they tended to be a little more dialogue. Mm-hmm. I was grateful that these were short stories, even though this is a huge book, because there is some dialogue to get through, and these weren't short stories. It's like you say, you sit there and spend some time on just one story, so...
Yeah, it's a definite change from modern-day comics, where you hope if you get 10 minutes out of one, you're like, wow, that took me a while to read. All these are...
It's weird that they have so much dialogue, but there's also, like, it's also some kind of simplicity to it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not...
Smaller panels, simpler drawing for... In certain cases. I mean, in your book's case, there's still a lot of really good detail going on there. In my case, a little bit less so, but I like reading the ads in the books, too. Yours doesn't have any ads, but...
No.
Come on, laser tag?
I would have wondered what the British ads would have looked like, too, so...
Laser tag, comic boy, we got an NBC Saturday morning lineup, two-page spread. It's just my favorite. And
the ads do take you back, I tell you.
Oh gosh, it was always food, cereal, like, well, food, cereal is food, but it was always like food and like TV. And I love the ads that were drawn. You know what I mean? Like there was a time here when people just didn't take pictures of stuff. They're like, it's in a comic book, we got to draw something. So they draw the ad. It's just awesome.
Laser tag.
Not laser tag.
They drew a big ad in there for laser tag. That's amazing.
Yeah. Love it. And on the back...
Sugar Daddy.
Sugar Daddy and Charleston
Chew. Oh, Charleston Chew, man. That doesn't get enough hype to this day.
I should contact Nabisco and ask him to get this headband.
Can I get the Sugar Baby's headband?
Can I get the headband now?
It's like Kofi Kingston.
I know it's like 25 years too late.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah, I'd say you know, for anybody that's been on the fence about maybe going back and maybe you like the new Dread movie, you know, or maybe you just like the Stallone movie, I don't know. But I tell you, it's worth digging up some of those old, and don't be concerned like I was in the beginning. I don't think it's that big a deal to start from the beginning in Dread at all.
Yeah.
If you basically know that, you know, he is the Uber judge of this futuristic time, that's all you really need to know, and it just rolls. So.
There's definitely some great stories to be had in that era. I think, you know, we talk a lot about Silver Age and we talk a lot about the 90s, but the 80s seem to get kind of lost in that shuffle, you know, almost a footnote to that era. And I still have a decent amount of 80s comics, and every time I go back, I'm amazed at how much they can still hold up to the test of time. You know, the art is sometimes, depending on the quality of your book, that's what has a lot to do with it. If you get a poor quality 80s book and the paper's all crappy and the ink's all kind of mushy, it can be really tough to read those. But if you get something in decent shape, you'll notice that those books still hold a lot of weight, and there were still a lot of great ideas. You look at some of the stuff that John Byrne did in the 80s. I mean, that stuff is just incredibly, like, ahead of its time. Stuff that holds up today. And then you'll get a book like I got, like Booster Gold.
George Perez, that's kind of when it comes to my mind. George Perez really struck out.
I mean, Booster Gold says wowza twice in the book.
You just reminded me, while you have that old Booster Gold book, I do have somewhere in my collection the entire run of the original Blue Beetle.
Oh, cool.
And that was around, so... he said some funny things too.
Oh yeah, he was,
and he was kind of, even when he kind of, you know, when they updated him, he still kept that same cheesy attitude that I found endearing. That's why he's one of my favorites, you know. And just, I miss him, even though I like Jaime. I miss old Ted Kord.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of off the cuff,
yeah.
Happy go lucky. I'm the happy Batman, and I'm the happy poor man's Batman. Here I come. So,
yeah, it's time to bring him back.
Yep.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add on comics of the 80s?
I hope folks having fun at ShivaCon this weekend in Roanoke, Virginia, because I'm not gonna be there.
What's at ShivaCon?
A lot. It's a great sci-fi convention. You know, a lot of retailers go there, a lot of artists, a lot of creators.
Why are you not going?
Why are
we going to this?
I'm on a two quest for love this weekend. I don't know why you're not going.
Yeah, I forgot about it.
You know,
I ripped off the little piece of paper that had the information on it, and I was like, I'm going to look this up. And
yeah, I didn't. I should have spoke to you more about it, but I was like...
Is it at the convention center?
It's,
same place where you...
I don't think it's there. I think it, I'm not sure where it's. It might be Hotel Roanoke, but I'm not positive. A lot of good artists I know are going to be there, and just I wanted to go hang out. Like there's always a cool like sci-fi crowd there. People cosplayed up in there. It's fun to go to. You should take maybe your kids. I mean, it's fun if you can get out there. It's all this weekend. It's a little expensive, but if you plan on making it worthwhile, it makes up for that. I mean,
right.
It's a good con. It's fun. It's a small con, and I think it keeps getting bigger. I'm hoping it continues to, because I think we need a little more on the east, you know, with San Diego and all that being over that way.
Right.
So, I can't make it to Chicago as much as I'd like.
Yeah.
So,
I have to mention your shirt before we wrap things up. It's a tremendous shirt. What's Neil has a shirt on, and it says Sloth Unchained, and it's got a picture of Sloth. Facade of Sloth from the Goonies breaking a chain. It's awesome. Neil has the best shirts.
It's another habit. I'm pretty much going to live in a box by the end of my life.
There's but you'll have comics, cool shirts.
Comics and shirts. Oh, man. Some cats coming out of it. So,
well, let's mention our two sponsors.
Beautiful people.
The beautiful people. B&D Comics. BNDComics.com. That's our local comic book shop.
It's like a wooden TARDIS for you Doctor Who fans. It's a comic shop that is made of wood logs and is full of fantastical things. And if you can hear my cat, it's because he's throwing a fit and he wants in for the show.
He's trying to chime in.
Sorry.
But no cats allowed. Sorry. And also stashmycomics.com. Go there, join the forums, be a part of something cool. In fact, I don't get to get on the forums nearly as much as I want to, but I got to say, anytime I have, people have been so cool. They have been nice, which you don't get in a lot of forums. You get Neil dropping his headphones.
Oops.
And make sure you go there and check it out. There's a lot of stuff to do. You can do your own reviews, and there's a billion reviews. And of course, we got the podcast, we got Geek Cinema, we got Geek on a Budget. There's tons of great articles there. You should definitely check it out if you haven't joined. So there's that. If you want to find us, you can go to stashmycomics.com, click on the social link at the top, and find us under podcast. Or you can go into iTunes, type in Ape, the number 4 comics, all together, and we come up under the Stash My Comics podcast there.
That we do.
So find us, and when you do, leave a comment, either on iTunes, hopefully a positive one, or right in the body of the episode that we put on Stash My Comics. We can communicate with you there. We thank Derek for communicating with us. And so, see, if you write something, we'll probably respond.
If it's not too wacky, and if it is, Matt will make me do it anyway.
Yeah.
All in the name of, all for the greater good.
Right.
That's it.
Gotcha. All right, kids and adults and whoever, cats.
And cats.
We're about to jump up on the show. Have a good night or day. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.